Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin driving a Kia Sorento this week.
A Kia Sorento that has a backup camera, a lot of power features, very comfortable front seats, room enough for five, plenty of room for tailgating equipment, for stadium chairs, for the 10x10 tent that you're going to put outside out of the back of the hatch. All that can easily fit in the Kia Sorento, and you can grab it for 0% financing for up to 66 months, 1.9% financing for 72 months, plus the Sorento only has 750 Kia finance cash with that low APR as well. So all that available with zero interest for 66 months. That's not a bad deal, and it's a very nice all-wheel drive vehicle. So even in the wintertime, you'll be able to get around without any problems. Find out more at Sunbury Motors Kia. You'll find them on routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. I'll tell you what, the gas mileage has been in the mid-20s back and forth. That's not bad at all. And very smooth riding all-wheel drive SUV. You'll enjoy it. Take a test drive as soon as possible while these promotions are going on. And those stickers in the windows, or the tags, I should say, in the windshield, are much lower than the sticker on the window. Especially when they want to sell a total of 30 more cars before the end of the month at Sunbury Motors Kia.
I talked to your chauffeur, Raul, today, and he told me that it is an incredible drive.
He enjoys it, and the backseat rides very well. Yeah, the backseat rides very well for me.
Very pleased with it. Very pleased. I thought, man, can't get a better endorsement than that.
Oh,
not
driver.
Only that, but... Not only that, Sunbury Motors and Sunbury Motors Kia feels a lot better with him driving instead of the person who's publicizing it. All right, so. Oh, what are you rolling your eyes for?
I do this every day.
So what do you want to know? This is a chance for you to open up and you ask the questions that you've been aching to ask.
Are you talking to me or the listener?
Oh, I don't believe this. How did we promote the segment before we went to the news?
I don't know. That was minutes ago. I don't know.
I guess we're lucky you remembered to show back up again.
I just knew when the news was over, I had to come back. No, the question I ask is, you know, we've talked about the offensive line over the last couple of years.
Somebody, please call. Please call now. Somebody, anybody.
How has the offensive line looked different this year compared to last year? What's different about the offensive line, or is there anything?
Well, there's more experience, for one thing, which really helps. Take, for example, a guy like Brendan Mann. Brendan Mann, with all due respect to him, was in a spot that, in all likelihood, he should not have played last year. But there was no choice but to play him last year. You did not have any other options. He was among the five best options you had to play offensive line last year. So as a redshirt freshman, he was thrown into it, and he needed to survive it, somehow play as well as he could. He made mistakes, got moved in and out of the lineup because it's not the easiest transition. Idealistically, you'd like to be playing guys like that and weaning them into the lineup when they're redshirt sophomores and not force-feeding a start on them as a redshirt freshman. Now, not everybody's the same in development, but idealistically, that's what you'd like to do. So Mann has now gone through a second winter program, a second June program, and the results are there. You see the game speed in him, and he's much more comfortable in it, much more comfortable in assignments. The game is more instinctive to him, and he's playing at a higher level. Can he get better? Yes, he can get better. But is he better now this year than last year? Yes. Andrew Nelson, I thought, showed great potential last year, the way he played the right tackle spot. And he's gone out and he's played pretty well during the course of this preseason. Angelo Mangiero, I had a nice talk today with Ange in the locker room before I went over to do the Wise Markets presentation, which was in the football auditorium today. And I was talking, you know, we were kidding around about the old AFL and old leagues and opportunities and things like that. But he's had himself a really good preseason. And it helps that, you know, he's mostly playing center. Yeah, he can move and play other spots. But he's been locked in and he's been playing that center spot. And Brian Guy, who's naturally strong to begin with, now has a full year under his belt and he can play. And Wendy Laurent played last year. Derek Dowry played last year, so he can push man, he can push Gaia. And Kevin Reiner has played, and Kevin's mostly played guard during the course of the preseason. So you have that now, which really helps. When you have seven guys that have had game experience before, you're not doing on-the-job training any longer. I think it also helps them that they are facing a defensive line, and Garrett Sickles and Schwann and Johnson and Zettel, and then you can bring in Barney, and you can bring in Torrance Brown, and you can bring in Curtis Cothran, you can bring in Carl Nassib, whatever, right? Any combination of those guys. I think it helps them on an everyday basis that they get to face that defensive line. Now, there are some moments for them where it's an awfully frustrating experience, and you hope their confidence doesn't wane at times because they face them. But then they get some victories against them and it allows them to get some confidence as they go. My personal opinion is this. They will not face a defensive line that is comparable to that one until they play Ohio State in the seventh game of the year. I think they'll go out in games, and even though I think Temple has a good defensive line, and then you got Buffalo, San Diego State's not that bad. You know, Rutgers not that bad with the defensive front at all. Rutgers, you know, decent defensive front. They're still not going to be as good as the one that they are facing on an everyday basis now. And I think that is going to be a primary benefit moving forward. Now, it has to come to fruition in games. You're really only now going to gain true game confidence by playing games and winning those battles up front. That's what we'll find out. But I think facing that defensive front on an everyday basis will open their eyes when they get into the opening six games of the season and realize that they've been facing one that's comparable to Ohio State and better than what they're facing in the games.
One of the things we've been hearing about, and as a matter of fact, Sports Illustrated mentioned when they put James Franklin as 29 in their top 30 college football coaches, was his recruiting ability. What is it that you're hearing from the players, especially the ones that have been recruited by Coach Franklin, that make them want to play for him so much?
They don't just recruit with a position coach or an area coach and then bring the head coach in. They recruit with all the coaches. There is a real game plan as to how they recruit when they bring players onto campus, and it is an all-encompassing recruiting pitch by all of the coaches. So if you bring in, let's just say they bring in a top flight wide receiver, it is not just Josh Gattis talking to him and John Donovan talking to him and James Franklin. It's everybody. Bob Shoup, Terry Smith, training staff, weight staff, you know, Dwight Galt, the strength and conditioning staff, player personnel, all the way through. You name them, they're all talking. Herb Hand, Sean Spencer, the defensive line coach, that they get a real feel for the fact that everyone is all in it together, and it's not just, you know, I really love my position coach, he's great, the head coach closed the deal for me, and then that's the way it has been done and is done at most places. When you make an on-campus visit here, you are surrounded by all of them, and they give you the feeling that you are the single biggest priority in the building at that moment. And you talk to the academic staff, you talk to every coach. So it's an all-encompassing, everyone is on board in recruiting said player when they come here. And James Franklin has, of course, obviously a very open personality. He's very people-oriented, people person. It is a natural enthusiasm. And I remember when Patrick Chambers was hired for basketball. And what they did was they had three finalists for the job. And what they did, what Tim Curley did at the time, is that he took the three finalists and he flew them all to Charlotte. And you could do that because Charlotte is a hub for U.S. Air. So he flew all the candidates to Charlotte. Now, why did they do that? They did that for a reason. They did that so they could conduct the interviews away from Pennsylvania and not have people hanging out at the airport to see who was coming in and who was coming out. And he interviewed all of them down in Charlotte. And I remember talking to him the next day and asking him, well, how did it go? He says, well, I don't know. I got to sort out what's real and what isn't. And I looked at him and said, ah, Chambers. He goes, he looked at me and says, all right, what does that mean? I said, Tim, he has it. I said, that is his personality. I said, that's not an act. I said, that's genuine. What you see with him is what you get with him. He says, some people put on an act. Some people are that way naturally. He's that way naturally. Same thing about James Franklin. What you see is what you get. He is that outgoing naturally. It is not an act. It is not one of those, oh, hey, I love you, and all of a sudden, boom, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, all of a sudden depression phase comes on, and, you know, no, he's quite the opposite. He's somebody that's up, easygoing, fun to be with, enthusiastic, and that's the way he is. And I think that personality is a natural in recruiting, but I think the fact that they get the entire staff involved, I think, you know, yeah, plus what the university has to offer. I mean, what the university has to offer, such a long list, all the majors, 160 majors that you have to choose from, the campus itself. You bring them into the stadium to recruit, and you see 107,000 people going crazy. And if it's a whiteout, they're all dressed in white, and that sense of unity and the noise when you're standing on the field, it blows you away. So there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Off of the Penn State topic slightly, I want to get your thought on this particular situation. Duke has lost several players to ACL injuries this year in this summer workout session. Do these ACL injuries, are we just hearing them more often, or are they becoming more common? Or are we just hearing about them a little more?
No.
No to which?
I wasn't listening. No. no, just kidding.
And we've seen it in the NFL, too.
But I think it's just a freak thing. That's all it is. I think unfortunately, there's certain things that happen, and they just seem to happen in bunches and in trends. I don't think it has anything to do with it. I think you should look into it. I think the one area you should look into is how many of these are contact versus non-contact. If there's a series of non-contact ACLs, Jordy Nelson, for example, is a non-contact ACL. Why does a non-contact ACL happen? Is it from wear and tear? Is it something that is structural within that individual's knee? Is it something in strength training and conditioning that has caused it to happen? It's the non-contact ACLs that really concern me. And contact ACLs, take the one Michael Motti suffered against Indiana. You can talk about whether you think it was a good hit, bad hit, whatever. But it still was a contact ACL injury. Now, the first ACL injury he had was absolute non-contact. He dropped into a zone and collapsed. Why? That's what I would like to know. It's the contact ones are just ones that just happen. Wrong place, wrong time, wrong spot, everything, okay? But it's the non-contact ones that need to be looked at, to me, to see if it has anything to do with, you know, how you're conducting your strength and conditioning program, whether it's something that is just hereditary, something that is structural. What factor caused a non-contact ACL to happen? That's what I'd like to know about. So You talk about the number of ACLs that Duke has. It goes much deeper than that. I want to know how many were contact in terms of pure practice and how many happen in a non-contact situation. It's the non-contact ones that that concern me that need more research so you can figure out why.
And my last question for you is back in the Big Ten. Connor Cook was not really highly touted coming out of high school. And you've talked about this many times. I think he was a 2- or 3-star prospect coming out of high school. And your comment has always been, let me see what they do, not what they've done in high school. Let me see what they do on the college field. He's obviously a much better player than the 3-star prospect he was said to be out of high school. Is he the best quarterback in the Big Ten right now? And why?
He and Christian are both, in terms of Christian Hackenberg and Connor Cook, are the best two NFL prospects in the Big Ten right now.
And they, what makes are them that? What is it that they have that everybody else doesn't? Let me ask it that way.
Vision, footwork, arm strength, accuracy delivering the football, command, leadership skills, hard work. Connor Cook does all that. Now, remember, Connor Cook, 2 years ago, when he was a redshirt sophomore, had to fight his guts out to win the job and finally beat out Andrew Maxwell, who was a fifth-year player who had transferred in from Oklahoma. And Maxwell was thought to be the heir apparent at Michigan State. And Maxwell had his ups and downs. He's struggling, and Cook beat him out. But, you know, the odd thing is Cook didn't exactly beat him out by a lot. And then he got into games, and once he got into games, he made things happen. And when he was making things happen, he said, well, they're never going to turn back from this guy again. You watch how he sets up in the pocket. The decision-making he makes is very, very strong. Footwork's really good. He has a feel in the pocket. He can make a couple moves to evade a sack. And I think he has a really good arm. I think he throws the short ball, medium ball really, really well. And I think he throws the deep ball. He throws the deep ball better and better every year. And I don't think there's any doubt in my mind, you know, along with Christian Hackenberg, they're the top two pro prospects of all of them in the Big Ten. Now, in fact, I don't even really think in terms of NFL possibilities there's any quarterback in the Big Ten that really is in their class as an NFL prospect for the two of them. And I think they're two actually relatively easy evaluations for the NFL because they both play the NFL kind of game. We will take a break. We will come back with more in a moment. Your questions at 800-795-9565. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sunbury Motors Ford has absolutely zero to talk about. 0% for 72 months, that is. Choose from over 150 new Fords with 0% financing for 72 months. SMC is where you want to be if you want $3,000 off plus 0% financing for 72 months on a 2015 Ford Fusion. SMC is where you want to be if you want $3,100 off the totally redesigned 2015 Ford Edge, plus get 0% for 72 months. SMC is where real Ford truck buyers want to be. Take $5,000 off your next new 2015 F-150, plus get 0% for up to 72 months. This is the first time all year where you can get 0% for 72 months on the 2015 F-150. SMC is where you want to be to take advantage of the best deals of the year. Come celebrate 100 years of serving Central Pennsylvania at Sunbury Motors, where zero will be your hero.
So we have a new poll question online.
Yes. Should sportsbook be allowed in Pennsylvania? That's our new poll question at SteveJonesShow.com.
I'm very interested to see how that poll turns out. Now, Pennsylvania right now is not eligible to have sportsbook. It's not one of the four states that's eligible to do it. The four states are Nevada, Oregon, Montana, and Delaware. New Jersey had its, you know, to be honest with you, New Jersey actually had its opportunity to sign on to this thing and expand it to five a few years ago and decided not to. Now they're trying to make up for lost time with it. But this, to me, is a very intriguing topic. And I always point out that I have zero interest in gambling. I never have, which I think actually allows me to be more effective on the air talking about a pro and con. I have no emotional attachment to it, unlike some others on the show.
Saves me money as long as it's not legal. Then I'm not tempted to do it.
So Kevin asked his questions. Final half hour, I have questions for him.
Oh, boy.
I've got to come up with stuff that's right up his alley.
You have bowling questions?
No.
Well, if it's not bowling questions, then it has to be IndyCar. Everything else is a bit of a question mark.
No, it's all right. I've got other questions.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin asked me a series of questions in the previous half hour. Now it's time to turn the tables on him. Topics Kevin asked me about dealt with Penn State football, quarterbacks, and ACLs. So now you're asking, what can I possibly ask Kevin? So let's get to the wheelhouse stuff. Madden 2016 is out. Your thoughts?
Haven't played it yet. I cannot give you my thoughts on it. I have not played it as of yet.
Are you excited to get your hands on Madden 2016? And if so, why?
I'm excited to get my hands on it. I'm not excited about how much it's going to cost me to play it. But I don't know. I you know what? Madden is a great game. Don't get me wrong. I have several of them. But NCAA football from EA Sports was my favorite, and that's the one I missed. And I actually played that more than Madden.
Great.
Now, if the Steelers would have won the Super Bowl, then I would have definitely bought the Madden game the moment it came out. Because I've had every year the Steelers have won the Super Bowl, or at least have been in the Super Bowl, I bought the following year's Madden game because I know those statistics would be very set up very well for the Steelers to get back to the Super Bowl when I played them.
Do you compete against your son on Madden football? And if so, who's better?
We are not allowed to play against each other. We're only allowed to play co-op style.
I have no idea what that means.
Co-op style means you play on the same team. We're not allowed to play against each other. It's not pretty.
So in other words, he defeats you.
No. There's allegations of cheating. He seems to win every challenge he tries, even if the challenge is blatantly wrong. He seems to win them. So we are only allowed to play co-op now.
All right, let's go on.
My favorite though is when we play co-op and he's the safety and decides to run into the end zone. And go, hey Dad, look at this! I said, I'm sorry, I'm too busy watching the wide receiver do a post pattern because the computer realized the safety was gone, and now so's the wide receiver for a touchdown.
All right, now another question in your wheelhouse. Ohio State will wear all black jerseys when they play Penn State October 17th. Your thoughts?
That's stupid. What's the point? Is there a reason for it?
I don't know. What do you think? I live there? Work there? What?
No, I thought maybe, you know, is it because that was their colors 200 years ago? Why?
It'll contrast with Penn State's whites.
It's just dumb. I'm going to be watching it in an HDTV. I don't need a black and white version of it.
Ohio State will be dressed in all black uniforms with black pants, black shirts, and Penn State will wear white jerseys with the white pants and the white helmets.
Maybe it'll snow that day and Penn State will blend right in.
Segment's just going so well, much better than I
thought. No. That happened once. It's probably 4 years ago now. No, actually, it's probably closer to 6 years ago now. There was a major snowstorm during a Bucknell Lafayette night game. There was about almost a foot of snow in the Allentown area. And Bucknell played the first half where they had to plow the lines off every time out so you could see where the ball was. And they were in their all-white uniforms. There was not a single holding penalty the entire first half. The opening series of the second half, Lafayette starts to drive the ball, Bucknell starts to drive the ball, and they get called for holding. Well, the snow had stopped at that point. And I said the reason for it is the officials could finally actually see Bucknell's players not blending in with the blinding snow, and they could see, and then maybe they just saw the holding all of a sudden. So if it snows, maybe that's Penn State's advantage.
Analysis I had never heard from Jack Campbell.
That's in-depth analysis right there.
What are the three most intriguing storylines to the start of the high school football season next week?
For me, I think...
Are you alive?
No, I'm trying to think of the three most intriguing. I think the most intriguing is... I honestly believe that there are a couple of teams, at least two to three teams in each division of the Heartland Conference that have a chance to win their conference. And there are a few teams that I think are very dark horses that could surprise some teams along the way and actually become competitive that you wouldn't think were because of their green or inexperience. That's what I think is going to be the most interesting part. For the upcoming. I do think there are a few teams that are head and shoulders above the rest, but I think they're reachable. I think they're beatable, put it that way.
All right.
That's the biggest one, I think. I think the conference is going to be very entertaining this year.
You asked me four questions, and my fourth and final question to you is as follows. What has been the biggest attitude change you've had on this show since starting it 4 years ago?
Well, I used to like you. I always thought, wow, he's a great guy. He's always listening to my stuff, always giving me good tips. Yeah, anyway. admit it. I give you a world of sports that you never have seen before.
Like what?
I have enlightened you into a view of sports that you don't often see yourself.
Okay.
Well, you haven't been a fan in 30 some years, so you haven't looked at things as a fan for a long time.
Oh, you mean that?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, okay. Now, look. All right. Yeah, but you have to remember this. All right, okay? It has nothing to do with not looking. Okay, it does have something to do with not looking at it as a fan does. But when you're around it every day and you see why and why not things work or don't work, and how it's organized and how it's done, it's not quite the same as being a fan. Fan asks questions, why this, why that. And when you're around it every day, you already have those answers. And when you have those answers, sometimes the answers are actually very simple, and that bothers people when they find out it's that simple and they think you're lying. And like, no, that's actually that simple. Why can't they run this play? Because one guy can't run it. Oh, come on. No, if one guy can't run it, you can't run the play. I mean, I've stood there. Yeah. Yeah. How do they organize it? Why do they do it? How do they attack it? Why do they attack it? How do they try to mask things? How do they, how do you run the same plays, but you do it out of different formations? All sorts of things. How deep in the playbook are they? Well, he said, they ran, I said, why? They ran like eight different plays. Just like, it's like, no, it was the same play. It was just run out of eight different
just formations. A different way of doing it. Right.
Right.
You know, I've learned that over the years, too, in watching Bucknell.
Same thing, basketball, whatever, as to why, and you know who's hurt, you know why they're hurt, you know, for example, who is very difficult for the trainers to deal with because they won't admit they're hurt, you know who tries to come back too soon because they want to get themselves back in there, and you also know which ones also get a twinge and go, oh my goodness, I need to be perfect to get back. So you know all of those things. And I don't know. It's just changed how I look at the whole experience, I guess.
You asked me about high school, but one of the things I'm looking forward to as well is Bucknell on Saturdays. This is a football team that I thought had potential to be in the playoffs last year and just stumbled in one game. They stumbled in that last game and, of course, had a chance to win the Patriot League and went overtime with Fordham on a Friday night. And a lot of that they did with players that were injured. This is what I said all year last year. Imagine a healthy R.J. Nitti all season at quarterback. Imagine being able to have both of your running backs, C.J. Williams and Matt Delmiro, both healthy, and you have that dual threat because each one of those running backs bring you a different type of back, a different style of back for the defense to look at. And then you throw in the wide receivers that this offense has the weapons there with Bobby Kaslander, who comes across the middle very, very well, and just the outright blinding speed of Will Carter. I saw him outrun some very solid corners and safeties this year, especially down at Lehigh, where he was running just down the sidelines and just didn't have to worry about separation. He got it with his feet. No need to use his arms to separate. That's what excites me. You throw that together with a defense last year that gave up one of the smallest numbers, if not the smallest number, of rushing yards per game in college football. Man, you got to be excited about this season.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the fun elements I find in this show is that over time, watching, this is what, our fourth season doing the show, is actually watching Joe Susan develop the Bucknell program. I've thoroughly enjoyed that part of it. There are stages to it. There's that building trying to get their stage. There's that we're just about their stage. There's that, let's go it over the hump stage. And then there's that stage where you're fighting and you're contending for it, and the fruit of all that labor is finally starting to fall into place. You need patience to get there. Patience is not a virtue of a coach normally. Patience is not a virtue of a fan base normally. Patience is not a virtue of the media covering the team normally. So you have all these groups that don't have patience trying to get through these various stages together. And then when things start to happen, now the fruit of the labor pays off for the coach. The fruit of the labor pays off for the players. The fruit of that labor and patience pays off for the fans. And for the media, it's a more fun element to cover on a week in and week out basis. And don't confuse the fact that, media wants to cover winning teams. It's more fun to cover winning teams. They'll sit there and go, oh, I hope they go 2-11. We'll have some great stories. people are really going to read about this. No, they really are going to read about it. So, you'd be amazed how not winning leads to, okay, tell me when they start to win.
And this offensive line, Steve, I mean, you're looking at 6'4", 295. 6'7", 315, 6'6", 315. I mean, Davenport and Rami, Julian Davenport and Rami Cassatt, one's the house, the other's an apartment complex.
Yeah, I understand the size part of it, but movement is a big part of this. If you have size and can't move, I find that to be irrelevant. I look at weights, but I also look at how it's distributed. How is it distributed on that individual? Can they move? Offensive linemen in today's game have to be three things. They have to be extremely smart, they have to be very strong, and they have to be very mobile. I mean, they need to be all three of those things. Your offensive line has to be very, very smart, very strong, and very mobile. If they're not one of those three, you've got a problem with your offensive line. And that's the way today's game is played. You have to have good athletes on that offensive line. You're not having offensive lines. So they say, hey, we're 325 to 335 across the front. If you can't move, it doesn't matter. Oh, yeah, you're big, so there are going to be a few plays that are going to work really well. But if you don't have mobility, your tackles don't have long arms. You don't have the ability to steer somebody in a certain direction. If you don't have the ability to get in the open field and make a block, it's just not going to matter. Now, we're not talking about having offensive linemen in the 260 to 285 range. So, yeah, you've got to have some bulk there because you'll be going up against some defensive lines that are really good. But when I look at let's take tackles, for example, I don't look so much at the weight of the tackle. The first two things I look at when I see an offensive tackle, footwork and arm length. I want to see a guy's footwork at tackle. I want to see his arm length. Then I'll mix that in next with how strong is he? Can he take a defensive end, and can he steer him? On a blitz, can he communicate well enough and then have an offensive line coordinated with the back to pick up the blitz? I mean, those are elements I look for. Center, first thing I look at as a center is, what kind of velocity and accuracy do you have in your shotgun snap? Then I start looking at, obviously, how strong they are at that particular spot. How quick are they to get to another spot if they don't have somebody head up on the nose or can take somebody head up on the nose and go from there? But they've got to be able to get the ball back first and crisp. And, I mean, on the money. I don't want my quarterback reaching down to his ankles to pick up the ball. I want the quarterback to comfortably get the ball with a good sharp snap right back to, that belt area with his eyes already up looking to see where he's going to throw the ball and not have to worry about it. Plays break down. It's the same as taking a point guard, dumping the ball down to the forward or center on the block, and he drops the ball and the entire rhythm of the play, suddenly the double team shows up and the whole thing is you broke the rhythm of the play. A bad shotgun snap, right, left, up, down. All of a sudden the quarterback's now concentrating so much on getting the ball, they're taking their eye off the receivers and off the coverage. So there are a lot of different elements that go into that. And I've watched, and whenever I watch Bucknell play, that is one really well-coached football team. It's been fun watching them develop. There may have been some days where it was not fun for Joe Susan to develop because, again, patience is not a great coaching virtue. We will come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WK. He started it.
Huh?
I was mentioning Coach Franklin and I had a text exchange this morning, and he actually is the one that started it, so I had to respond.
What are you most excited about for the start of the season?
I've told you this already, and when I introduced him today at the Wise Markets, it was good to see Jamie Hynoski, by the way, my golf partner from a couple of years ago. When I introduced him today, I think I surprised him a little because I haven't really talked to him about this. He'll ask me from time to time what I think about whatever. And I told the group there, I said, this is the best preseason I've seen here in tone, tenor, organization, and so forth since 2008. And I think what excites me most about the season is that I feel the program, after having to fight so hard to fight their way through sanctions, and when I mean the program, I mean every phase of it, from the contributions of the fan base, the contributions of the coaching staff, the contributions of the players, and the organization as a whole. You've had to, the publicity staff, everybody, everybody's had to fight and watch this fight happen the entire time, and it has not been easy. And you now finally feel that you're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that they're coming out of sanctions, and they can put a team on the field with a level of athleticism that's exciting. The skill position athleticism they have in this team on both sides of the ball is really fun to watch. You know, the kids at wide receiver, Juwan Johnson and Irvin Charles, as examples, both can really move and have great size. Brandon Polk may not have size, but he's lightning quick. And you're seeing it in the secondary. You're seeing it in the quickness of and the speed of a Grant Haley. They made room for Haley on the field to get him there by putting Jordan Lucas at safety. And the development of a Christian Campbell, the development of a Jason Kabinda. Kabinda has become a really good linebacker to go with an experienced guy like Brandon Bell. See Zetelin Johnson there. Marcus Allen's development's been fun to watch. There's a lot of things about this football team I like. Are they perfect? No, they're not perfect. Will they have to fight their way through some games? Yeah, they'll have to fight their way through some games. But I feel like the area I'm excited the most about the program is that I'm sensing the return to normalcy. Getting to the point what people expect to see out of a Penn State football team. That's the part that's exciting me, is I'm seeing a return to normalcy with a very passionate, organized coaching staff. Pennsylvania, Texas tonight, Little League World Series. That should be terrific.
That's the game I'm waiting to see.
I'll be 3 miles away.